In terms of the ER positive issue and the interaction, what makes me think that it's real is that it's so consistent with so many other trials, and you could superimpose it on the Don Barry JAMA paper. And this is one where I actually think that the subsets are deafening, and I think it's very likely that differences in chemotherapy regimens matter far less in these endocrine-responsive tumors, to use a St. Gallen kind of term.
Could I ask, Aman, what your take was about the overview data that hasn't been published but has been presented in terms of this question of chemotherapy and ER-positive tumors?
I think if you look at the overview data, it suggests that benefit of chemotherapy is independent of the age, receptor status, and the nodal status of the disease. The proportional reduction is very similar regardless of the ER status. And our own small study in which we looked at the role of a taxane in ER-positive, ER-negative patients, proportional reduction, although it did not reach the statistical significance because the sample size was small, but if you look at the reduction, it was very similar between the subgroups. I think that these type of thinking that ER matters, I personally do not think that there is any chemotherapy whose benefit is modulated through the receptor pathway.
Eric?
Ooh, we've identified a second issue that Aman and I disagree about. We had come together so closely, and now we're diverging. So in the overview, and outside of the overview, of course, in premenopausal women, the issue of the benefit of chemotherapy is confounded by what happens in terms of ovarian function. So that makes it very, very hard to sort out. And in a sense, Aman is right in that the proportional reduction is not so very different in ER-positive and ER-negative disease in many of these trials. But the problem is that chemotherapy works in the first few years. And in women with ER-positive disease, with hormone-responsive disease, who are given effective endocrine therapy, the event rate in the first few years is very low. So the result is that the absolute benefit, which, as we said earlier, is what matters to our patients, for a lot of these regimens ends up being very small for those ER-positive patients.
Yeah, I think if you see this data in 3 more years, that may not be such a striking effect.
Let me clarify one thing, that I still think that patients who are very ER-rich, I think in that subgroup of patients, we don't have the data. I think over there, the chemotherapy may play a more modest role compared to the patients who are average ER. I think in those patients who are not ER very rich, I think chemotherapy does substantially add to the endocrine therapy. Whereas if you are a patient who is very strongly ER positive, I think in that subgroup of patients, the addition of chemotherapy may be very marginal or modest, to say the least.
Matt?
I think that we all recognize that ER positive breast cancers are a heterogeneous group of tumors. And I am thinking about this issue of benefit of chemotherapy, ER negative versus ER positive. But we also know, for example, with respect to the anthracycline, as an example, there's a difference also as to whether they're HER2 positive or HER2 negative. And in general, we practice breast oncology based on 4 subsets, ER positive, HER2 negative, ER positive, HER2 positive, and then ER negative, HER2 positive, and double negative. And so if you actually take the ER-positive group and split it by HER2 status, I think you'll find that the ER-positive HER2 negatives derive very little benefit, I would suspect, from the so-called third-generation regimens, indistinct to some other groups. And this is probably also true for anthracycline. It's probably also true for taxanes. And we're working on this, actually, in 9344 to complete that analysis that Dan Hayes did, where he did this 4-way classification and really found that the addition of the paclitaxel and the ER-positive HER2-negative group was basically the Kaplan-Meier curves on top of each other. So I think that bottom line is that ER-positive breast cancer is about to splinter very rapidly into a number of subsets, not just defined by HER2, but in the Oncotype assay, there's an additional amplicon that's measured there, which is 20Q Aurora kinase amplicon, right, STK15. That has a strong independent prognostic effect. And I think that you'll find that additional amplicons will be added that define different ER-positive disease subsets. Hopefully some of those will be linked to further targeted therapy. Certainly the Aurora kinase amplicon, there's Aurora kinase inhibitors in development right now. So again, it's funny because we all have our different standard things that we say. I always say, it's much more complicated, right? Eric says, but look at the literature, and quotes some perfect paper from 10 years ago. And Paul Goss says, look at the instructive information from the endocrine therapy trials. So we're pretty consistent. But I mean, this point about disease heterogeneity is going to come in very strong over the next 2 or 3 years as we actually write the breast cancer genome atlas, which will actually, I think, ultimately reveal a lot of the answers to the questions we seek.